Yeah, I am David. I'm from Kansas State University. Dr. Rivard is my advisor, and he would have loved to come to this conference, but he just had a baby, so his wife did. But anyway. Yeah, so solanaceous grafting is something that's been around for quite a while. The first record I came across of solanaceous plants being grafted was in 1847, when there was an account of a guy who did a project on tomato-potato grafting. And this Tom Tato, or I don't know if you guys have seen it, commercially advertised as like a ketchup and fries or something like that, is now a pretty popular thing. And that's an example of interspecific grafting. Interspecific grafting is pretty common in the solanaceous group, specifically within the solanum family. So things like tomatoes, peppers, well, not I'll get into peppers. Tomatoes, potatoes, eggplant have all been grafted together with a lot of success. And since the 1960s, those interspecific hybrids then have been used as rootstocks for tomatoes, for peppers. There's also been some reports of successful intergeneric grafting between tomatoes and peppers. And so that's kind of what we looked at as a part of this project, was whether that was something that was feasible, how hard was it to do, what kind of effects did it have on the plant. So why would we graft peppers? There's been some research done with grafted peppers using specialized pepper rootstocks, but that's really kind of a more recent development as compared to the use of tomatoes for grafting. And we also wanted to determine the feasibility of intergeneric grafting between capsicum and solanum, because in the tomato group, there are a lot of there's a lot of genetic diversity. There's a lot of characteristics that maybe you don't have available within peppers, within the capsicum genus. Things like Phytophthora resistance are pretty easy to find in tomato rootstocks, stuff like that. So we also wanted to look at some potential compatibility issues because we are now going within and between genuses rather than within a genus, and do some field trials, because most of the projects that have been done up to now have not happened over a long period of time. So we also looked at some pepper rootstocks as a part of this project, and we wanted to see how those worked, how they compared, stacked up to the non-grafted plants, how they compared to the ones that we grafted to tomatoes, and see how those worked specifically in a high tunnel production system. That's what we do a lot of as far as peppers and tomatoes go, and that's pretty common on a more commercial scale. So the process we used when we grafted our peppers was pretty similar to the process most people use to graft tomatoes. It's a splice grafting method. We do remove the leaves, or about 85% of the leaves from the scion, and that just helps with adventitious rooting and the plants not drying out in the healing chamber. But our chamber management was pretty similar to tomatoes. We kept it dark, really humid for the first 2 days, started reducing the humidity around day three. Sometimes they wilt on days 4 to 6. We have that happen with tomatoes too. Not always, but it does happen. Then we wean them off to the regular humidity and light levels of the greenhouse. We did notice that peppers took 12 to 14 days in the healing chamber, which is quite a bit longer than tomatoes do. But the first year we tried it, we had about a 93% success rate, and that's with grafting, using this method for peppers on top of tomatoes. And this season we repeated it, and I don't have the data here because it's still in process, but we got, I'd say, a lower success rate, but still probably 70 to 80%. So our rootstock design, or our study design, we use two rootstocks in this first year. And so we use Scarface, which is a designated pepper rootstock from Enza Vitalis, It's supposed to help increase performance. It's supposed to be nematode resistant. And then we use Maxifort, which is kind of an industry leader as far as tomato root stocks go. It provides a lot of yield improvement. It provides a lot of disease resistance for tomatoes. And so we just wanted to see how that would stack up, if those kinds of benefits would be able to transfer to the pepper side. Our non-grafted control was Charisma, which is a pretty popular variety of bell pepper. So that was what we used as a scion for everything. We had non-grafted plants and plants grafted onto both rootstocks at two locations. We had one at the Olathe Horticulture Research and Extension Center in a high tunnel, and another one at the John C. Pear Horticulture Center in a field plot. And I'm going to talk about them as we go on, as like the high tunnel versus the open field, but take that with a bit of a grain of salt, because really they weren't at the same location, and the trial wasn't really set up to compare high tunnel versus open field. But a lot of the results, I think we can probably attribute to that difference. There are some differences in soil type and things like that between the two locations, but that's something to keep in mind. So yield was the first thing where we saw a big difference. In general, the Maxifort rootstock that we put under the peppers performed pretty poorly. The plants did survive, but they yielded 48% lower than the non-grafted plants at the high tunnel location, and 87% lower than in the open field location. So the yield differences between the Scarface, the pepper rootstock, and the non-grafted rootstock were insignificant. So we saw basically no difference. In general, the high tunnel yielded higher. So these are, in all of these graphs coming up, I'm going to have the high tunnel OREC location results on the right-hand side, and the John C. Pear open field locations on the left-hand side. So this was our pepper or our tomato rootstock, and this is our non-graft and our pepper rootstock, and the order is the same over here. And so the relationship between the three stays pretty consistent between locations, or within locations, but between locations it's a little different. So fruit morphology was also affected. So our tomato rootstock, which is this pepper right here, was significantly smaller. The fruit in general was 29% smaller than the non-grafted fruit that was produced. The fruit size was not significantly different for the non-grafted plants and for the Scarface. Whoa. For the non-grafted plants and the Scarface, so it was stayed pretty similar at each location for those two. But the high tunnel did produce larger fruit. That location produced larger fruit. So the relationship between from high tunnel, but within the high tunnel and within the open field was pretty similar. When we started looking at biomass, that's where things kind of started to get interesting, and I'll show you more on the next slide. But our non-grafted plants had pretty high biomass. This is above ground biomass that we're talking about here. But as you can see, the grafting onto the tomato rootstock really stunted the plants. And these were all planted at the same time, same date. They were seeded on the same day. They just did not grow like their brothers. So the Maxifort had 50% less above-ground biomass at the tunnel location and 80% less in the field. So it was a pretty extreme visible difference that we saw in biomass and bared out in the data. So as you can see, once again, you know, there was a difference between locations. So we had a lot more plant matter in the tunnel than we did in the open field. But there was not really a significant difference, once again, between the non-grafted plants and the plants grafted onto a pepper rootstock. So we also measured compactness. This is a picture of the plant dryer at John C. Pear Center, and Dr. Griffin, who I think is in the audience, is kind enough to run all of those plant samples through his dryer for us. But Maxfort plants exhibited like really low plant compactness compared to the others. And this is where the rootstock really started to shine. So our Scarface plants showed higher compactness, p-value of 0.06, so not way higher, but it was something that was starting to become noticeable. The Maxfort were a lot less compact, 27% less in the tunnel, 73% less in the field, and that was, it was interesting to see because it wasn't something that you could, you noticed, I guess, when you walked into the tunnel to look at stuff. Below ground morphology was fascinating as well. In terms of biomass, there wasn't a huge difference across the board, really, in either location, except for the Maxfort, the tomato rootstock that we used in the open field. But there were some very distinct visual differences at the graft union, which probably play into some of the results we were seeing earlier with the lower yield, lower biomass, lower fruit size. So this is our non-grafted plant, fairly robust root system, kind of what you'd expect from a healthy pepper. This is our Scarface. This is the pepper rootstock that we used and showed some signs of scion overgrowth, which is typically a sign of incompatibility, or at least delayed incompatibility. But the plants themselves didn't seem to show signs of that, which is interesting, and I'm not going to tell you why that happened because I don't know yet. But our Maxfort, our tomato rootstock, showed kind of the opposite. We had rootstock overgrowth or scion undergrowth, whatever you want to call it. So our scion was a lot thinner, narrower, and I have, there's plants in the field now with this year's trials that show this even to a more extreme degree than what you see on these pictures, and I would have liked to have gotten a photo of that, but that didn't happen. And so symptoms of delayed incompatibility are showing up, as well as this pretty distinct line right there is another kind of visual indicator that the two parts have not joined properly. But once again, you know, little effect there. Hard to tell why that's happening. So some of the conclusions that we had, that intergeneric grafting, so between the solanum and capsicum genre, is possible. You can graft peppers to tomatoes. In general, you can get a high success rate. The plants will survive if you treat them well. But is it commercially feasible? Is there a good reason to do it? Maybe not. We're still waiting to see. We have more, another year of data coming down the line this year, and I don't have all of that data put into the computer, and we still have plants in the field, so it'll, we'll see kind of what happens. But there's reciprocal grafting projects that probably need to be done. We need to try tomato on top of pepper rather than the other way around to see if we get the same kind of effects, visual effects, at the graft union. And we probably need to try other rootstocks and scions because the rootstock-scion interactions are very variety-specific in a lot of cases. Even between tomato rootstocks and tomatoes, the variety of the rootstock and the variety of scion, changing one of those or both of those can have a huge effect on how the plants perform. Using a Scarface pepper rootstock, on the other hand, may increase the plant compactness without a significant yield loss. And this is important, especially for people who grow in a high tunnel, like most of our research is, because you could potentially plant at a higher density, get more plants in your tunnel, get a higher yield per square foot, where in a high tunnel, square footage, space is at a premium, and maximizing your yield as a function of your space is really important. There are other pepper root stocks that we're trying. I think we have four pepper root stocks this year that went in. We're trying another tomato rootstock, an heirloom this time instead of a interspecific hybrid like Max Ford is. And so we'll see what happens. It's kind of an interesting area, and we're moving into a little bit of unknown territory here. So I'd like to thank Dr. Griffin for letting us put a trial in at his research center and helping us gather data and try plants. Todd Griggs is a grower who's running an on-farm trial for us this year. I'd also like to thank Kim Oxley. This is one of her sons who she volunteered to help harvest. And Paul Anderson, Zach Hoppenstedt, just people who work at the research center. So our funding was provided by an SCRI grant. And yeah, I think we have about a minute for questions. No time for questions? Okay. Very well.